Hi, I'm Dr. Pam Peek, and welcome to episode 76 of Her, the podcast all about women, where we share the naked truth about her mind, her body, and her life. And today we're talking about her ground beneath us. But before we jump into that, just know that this episode of Her is made possible by our wonderful friends at Smarty Pants Women's Complete Vitamins. They're delicious once-a-day gummies that contain the complete vitamin, mineral, folate, and omega mix customized for women. Trust me, you won't forget to take them because they taste so great. To learn more, run on over to smartypantsvitamins.com. And just a quick reminder to hop on over to iTunes after our episode to rate and review this podcast, because I love to hear from you. Yeah, feedback rules. All right, it's time for Her.
Her. The podcast.
The naked truth about women.
Her mind.
Her body.
Her life. It's all about her.
So I had the pleasure of reading a wonderful interview in National Geographic all about a book, The Ground Beneath Us, From the Oldest Cities to the Last Wilderness, What Dirt Tells Us About Who We Are. Yeah, why dirt so damn good for you? What does that mean? Well, we have with us Paul Bogart, and he is Assistant Professor of English at James Madison University in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Oh my gosh. You know, he teaches creative nonfiction writing at the university and wrote this book. I could tell from his soul. He traveled all around the world to really understand what the heck is going on with our connection with nature. I'd love to read a beautiful, one of my most favorite quotes from Thoreau, Henry David Thoreau, from The Maine Woods, one of Thoreau's books. This was written in 1864. And this opens up Paul's book. And here it is. Talk of mysteries. Think of our life in nature. Daily to be shown matter, to come in contact with it, rocks, trees, wind on our cheeks. Ah, the solid earth, the actual world, the common sense. Contact, contact. Who are we? Where are we? Paul, welcome to the Her podcast.
Oh, so good to be here, Pam. Thank you.
Oh, okay, so I'm going to be transparent. I'm a total outdoorsaholic, right? I mean, let's just put it right out there. I'm not going to lie. I'm an outdoor athlete. I've been a hiker. Show me any mountain. I'm kind of like a goat. Just throw me on the damn thing. And when I was at Berkeley, even though I was pre-med and doing biology cellular emphasis, God help me, I also double majored in conservation of natural resources and was one of the first graduates of that brand new department, which is now the number one in the country. And I learned all about ecology and damping off disease in Monterey Pines. At the same time, I was also learning about humans. And one of the things that has always been of incredible interest and concern to me is what appears to be our disconnect with nature. Now, you speak to this. Tell us what that's all about.
Well, I love that you started with the quote from Thoreau, because I think it's so key to what I'm trying to do, which is really to raise our awareness of how we've lost contact with nature. You know, one of the reasons I wrote this book and one of the places I started was this amazing estimate that we now spend 90 to 95% of our time inside, whether it's in our houses or our buildings or our cars. And I started to think, you know, when we do walk outside, a lot of us walk on pavement. So we've become literally separated from the natural grounds. And that started me on a journey of thinking about how we're also separated then from the grounds that give us our food, our water, our energy, even our spirits. And I really wanted to get after what are the costs of the separation and what can we gain from becoming reconnected?
I love it. And, you know, when I read that, I just absolutely, it just blew my mind. The average American adult now spends 93% of their life indoors. It's mind-boggling to me. When, you know, it's almost like you don't want to go outdoors barefoot and actually feel dirt. It's like not good for you to do that. Children do it all the time, and they play and they revel in nature. But somehow, as you know, as we've been evolving here, we've gotten further and further away from it. So that even going to just a city park is like a big deal. You know, God forbid you should go to a mountain, see the ocean, all of that. And that makes me incredibly sad. I don't know. It's just, wow.
And then you raised,
go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, you raised the notion of kids, children. And I think children have just this natural love for nature. They love getting out. They love getting dirty and playing in the yard, playing in the grass, playing on the beach. And I think that is one of the things that I found in writing this book that most startled me, is the way that children are not being allowed even to go out and play. You know, we're so afraid of what's outside, or whether we're afraid of strangers, or we're afraid of getting hurt, or we're just afraid of the mystery of outdoors, that we're not allowing our kids to get out and play. And so we're raising this generation of kids who aren't forming these bonds through their contact with nature. And I think that has, you know, long-term ramifications for them and for our society.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. In this week's column for Well on physical education at the New York Times, Gretchen Reynolds talked about children and play, and noted that the less they play, the more incredibly deleterious ramifications for their health and multiple levels. It isn't just that, you know, they're going to now, you know, put on a bunch of weight and back and forth, but they're disconnecting mentally and spiritually from their very surroundings, from nature itself, which is horrific. Tell us, you know, in the book you talked about soil sealing and how roads and suburbs are literally eating away at the ground beneath our feet. Everyone needs to understand this, because when I read it, my heart sunk and I thought, oh my God. So tell us about this.
Yeah, I'm glad you brought that up. Soil sealing was one of those concepts that when I learned about it from a soil scientist actually in Parma, Italy, it just kind of blew my mind, and I thought, oh my gosh, of course, right? And it's just this idea that, first of all, you know, our resource of soil is so limited. There's so much of the Earth's surface that really doesn't have the kind of soil we need to grow things. It's very, very limited. And then our treatment of the soil we do have is really cause for alarm. And one of the things that we're doing is this idea of soil sealing, which is, I mean, first you have to understand, as we are understanding more and more all the time, that the ground is alive, and that soil is an ecosystem full of life. And when we pave it over, we essentially cut that life off from the water, the air that it needs, and it dies. Mm-hmm. So we're essentially killing off the ground. Yep. And you know what's crazy too is, it makes sense, because we're, you know, the places where our cities grew were often the most fertile areas, because that's where we were able to grow food in that. And so as our cities expand, we're paving over the most fertile areas, and all this at the time when we're having more and more mouths to feed. So we're kind of headed in a dangerous direction.
Oh gosh, it breaks my heart. You know, I want to, you know, this also goes hand in hand, this whole connection with nature and this ground beneath us, with, you know, it's funny how it's paralleling less and less play. Mm-hmm. You know, people are playing less. Where do you play? I remember when I was growing up, you know, my parents would always say, go play outdoors.
Right.
You know, they're not going to say, go play on the roof, you know, go play in the attic. No, go play outdoors. And I think that was so fascinating because, you know, for me, it was, you know, falling out of a tree, having so much fun and dangling out of trees, you know, jumping into mud holes. Oh, there's the ground again. And what do we do now? You know, we've got latchkey kids and the outdoors is more threatening now. We're distrustful. And so we just keep pulling back from it. In one of your chapters here, Manhattan, from your wonderful book, The Ground Beneath Us, you write Merriam-Webster's definition of ground, the solid surface of the earth. And then also says, grounds, the basis for belief, action, or argument. I thought that was a great juxtaposition, you know, to kind of get us, you know, I loved that. What were you doing when you did that?
No, I'm so glad that you noticed that, Pam. It's obviously intentional. And I wanted people to, you know, draw people's attention not only to the literal ground, and I would, you know, write, I had plenty to say about that, but also this idea of the grounds on which we build our lives. Build our assumptions about what it means to live well. You know, I think the natural world, you know, is undoubtedly the foundation of our lives. And I wanted people to think about how, as we become disconnected from the literal ground, we also become too often disconnected from the grounds, the reality that which is. That the natural world, the natural ground, sustains us. It, you know, we cannot live without it. And yet, too often in our laws, in our ways of life, in our ways of doing business, we live as though we are, you know, separate from the natural ground. Our beliefs are the grounds of our being. Are that we're separate. And it's not true, but we live that way. And I just wanted to make that connection. Between the literal ground and the symbolic ground.
Oh, I love it. It's so beautiful. And then again, being a physician, I couldn't help but notice that you also had a beautiful piece when you wrote your chapter on London. So as a physician, I'm always looking for that, the body and the earth, as they say, and the beautiful quote from Wendell Berry. It is wrong to think that bodily health is compatible with spiritual confusion or cultural disorder or with polluted air and water or impoverished soil. Mm-hmm. I loved that because, damn it, you know, I think it's just time we finally understand that we live in an ecosystem, for crying out loud, men and women out there, people, it's an ecosystem. And everything is interconnected. You know, this isn't some earthy, crunchy movement here. We're talking about, you know, real connections. And that if you think for 5 seconds you're going to achieve optimal mind-body health by living in an environment that's in such disarray and disorder, pollution, and as it said here, impoverished soil, give it a break. It's not going to happen. And that's why I'm glad you put it there to kind of remind us of this. So when all this global warming stuff's going on, what goes through your head?
Well, that's a big question. But I do think that what we're seeing is because we've become disconnected from the natural world and we don't see our own health or our children's health as connected to the health of the natural world, maybe we're not in some places taking climate change or global warming as seriously as science would tell us we should. You know, if you listen to the science, if you listen to the experts, they're warning us. They're saying we need to pay attention to this. We need to be talking about how to deal with this. And I think that if people really understood that their health and the health of their children, their children's children, depended on, as it does, the natural world, we might be having this conversation in the way that we need to. I think the most unfortunate thing about what's happening with climate change or global warming in our country right now is that people have just refused to talk about it. You know, let's talk about it. Let's engage with what's happening and realize that our health depends on it.
It's just one of those things where I think we're just, hopefully it's not too late, you know, we're just beginning to open our eyes to this. All of us who, you know, basically live at some REI shop, buying some more shorts and some more bandanas and, you know, doing that whole gig. You know, it's so funny when I walk into an REI, the recreation, you know, equipment place where people can buy, you know, anything from hiking shoes to sneaks to bikes and everything you can possibly need for camping and all the rest of it. You know, I feel like I'm walking in with tribal members, you know, because everybody, you know, kind of gets it and you don't have to explain yourself. And we all live the same culture. And then you go outside and there's asphalt, right? Everywhere. And then there's cars everywhere. And there's just, you know, there aren't enough wildflowers. Instead, there's astroturf, you know, the fake grass and the rest of it. And sometimes it's so disheartening. How do you help yourself, you know, kind of stay positive about all this?
It's a great question. And it's something that I think about a lot, actually. I think when you love the natural world and you see what's happening to it in so many places, it can be really, really hard to keep your spirit up. I think, you know, one thing that is, so important is to be with people, who appreciate it as well, so that you don't feel alone and you don't feel like you're the only one who is feeling sad or dispirited. And then I honestly feel better when I go for a long walk, when I get back out into nature and I hear the, you know, this time of year, the birds are going crazy and with happiness and, you know, to feel, I'm up in Minneapolis, so we're starting to feel that warmth again and summer is just around the corner. And you realize that, you know, the world isn't waiting for waiting to go on. The world is continuing on with its life. Leaves are coming out of the trees everywhere, and that gives me real hope as well. But I think the main thing for me is I have to stay engaged. You know, it's not a choice for me to just say, "Gosh, there's so much bad news. I'm going to tune out," because I love the world too much to just tune out. And so part of, you know, sometimes there is sadness, but I think that's part of being alive, you know, and oftentimes there's so much joy as well.
I love it. You know, one of the things I loved was in your subtitle, it says, "What Dirt Tells Us About Who We Are." You know, in our body, we have the microbiome. Our entire body is a biome. And we have trillions of, you know, what I call friendly critters, our bacteria, that help us maintain a balance and to protect us. And one of the things that started becoming very clear and has emerged in science over the course of the last half dozen years or so is that to maintain that, you need contact with the natural ecosystem. And dirt's part of that. It's really healthy for kids to hang out in dirt because dirt also has microorganisms that are incredibly friendly and helpful to us. It's nature begetting nature. And that's why when I saw that, dirt tells us who we are in more ways than you'll ever know, you know, in ways that a lot of people don't fully appreciate or know about because they're not knowledgeable about that. And then as well, dirt gifts us with things like food. You have a beautiful quote from Conservation is Not Enough from Joseph Wood Crutch. If we do not allow the earth to produce beauty and joy, it will, in the end, not produce food either. Tell us what you were talking about with that.
Well, I'm a big one for the beauty of the earth. I really, you know, the more I can draw people's attention to that and to say, look at the amazing life and beauty we have around us, I want to do that. And I think that quote, you know, comes in relation to my discussion of soil and how we're raising our food. And too often now we're treating our soil as just essentially a non-living holder of plants fertilized by, you know, chemicals and fossil fuel fertilizer and that kind of thing. And it's as one scientist described her home state of Iowa, an open air factory owned by monopolies. And I just, you know, I want to say, as Joseph Wood Crutch says as well, it's like, if we treat our ground, our soil, in a way that doesn't appreciate beauty and doesn't appreciate the microbiotic life in the soil, in the end, we're not going to be able to raise our food either. Those things go hand in hand, and appreciation. And when I say beauty, I mean not only, you know, the great big beauty of birds and animals and butterflies and bees, but also the beauty of the, you know, microscopic world at our feet as well. We need to recognize how important that is to our health and certainly to the raising of our food.
Wow. And you're so right. You know, you also talked about sacred ground, something very special about northern Minnesota and what sacred ground is all about. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, sacred ground is really kind of where I end up at the end of the book. After I visited the Nazi death camp at Treblinka in Poland, and then I head up to Alaska and experience the wonder there. And I, in northern Minnesota, I tell the story at the end of the book of how the book really began, which was that I had a wonderful dog for 15 years. And, you know, every summer we would go to our lake cabin in northern Minnesota. And when she passed away about almost 4 years ago now, I knew that I wanted to bury her there near the lake. And as we did,
what kind of dog was she?
She was a bird dog, a Brittany, orange and white.
What was her name?
Luna.
Oh, yeah. Luna. Well, I'm a dog person.
Great dog.
I've got my I've got my German Shepherd constantly with me. So,
absolutely.
Yeah, when I read that, my heart went out to you, Paul, because she was with you for 15 beautiful, incredible years. So when you buried her, that became sacred ground.
It did. I realized, you know, that this was the ground that was more important to me than any other. And what I discovered in writing the book and visiting these different places was that for me, sacred ground means those places where you understand what keeps you alive. You understand the connections between the people and the animals that you love and the natural world that sustains you. So it can be an amazing, you know, place where something happens, like a Treblinka in Poland or a great wilderness like Alaska, but it can also just be the garden out back or the, you know, the ground near the lake in northern Minnesota where you bury your best friend. So.
Wow. Yeah. Again, my heart went out to you because, you know, I think you don't even have to have it. You know, wonderful canine in your life or any kind of pet to really understand. But, you know, they're a family member and they're a piece of our heart and soul.
Absolutely.
And so there you have your sacred ground. No question about that. So, you know, I want to make sure that everyone knows we're talking to Paul Bogard, and that's B-O-G-A-R-D. His website is paulbogard.com. And the title of the book, which you absolutely have to get, this book is such a gift to yourself and to whomever else in your life. The Ground Beneath Us, From the Oldest Cities to the Last Wilderness, What Dirt Tells Us About Who We Are. Paul, this has just been an extraordinary segment. And I know that you've shared so much from the book, kind of a little bit of a teaser for people who are going to go out there and buy your book. As we close, all right, so as we close, what kind of things can we do to become more connected to the ground beneath us?
Sure. Well, absolutely. Step outside, you know, step outside and look down and start thinking about what you see. Do you see all pavement? Do you see a chemical turf grass lawn, or do you see something else? And I really encourage people, once they become aware of what's beneath their feet, to get out and explore, to go for a walk, if you can, to go to wild areas if you can. I encourage people to dig their hands into dirt if they love gardening, or even just to plant a flower, plant some flowers in a pot on your deck. There's just so many things we can do individually right now to get in contact with the ground beneath us. And then from there, it just extends to getting involved with your community about land use decisions, and getting involved with your larger communities about the direction of our society. I think it's just reconnecting with that thing that literally sustains us.
Wow. Okay. Right after we're all done here, I'm taking my guy, my German Shepherd, out, and he has special sacred ground that he does all kinds of sort of interesting things on. And he takes me amazing places, and guess what? Mm-hmm. None of them involve asphalt. It's parks, and it's just open fields, and it's wildflowers. And as he frolics and he tries to snap every single one of those bumblebees, I have no idea why he likes bumblebees. And, you know, I'm praying to God he doesn't, you know, get stung in his mouth. But, you know, it's just we're also playing in nature. And so when you go out, add fun and play to it. Grab that frisbee. How about that ball? You know, and just get on out there and nature to nature. And Paul, thank you so much for gifting us with this terrific book and your own journey as well. So thanks once again for being on the Herb Podcast, Paul.
Thank you, Pam. It's been my pleasure.
Remember to catch every episode of Her. Just hit subscribe on iTunes or on our show page at RadioMD.com. And just take a second or two and give us a rate and a rating. Oh, we can't wait to read these reviews, because we love to hear from you. Remember, your feedback rules. I'm Dr. Pam Peake. Follow me on Twitter at PamPeakeMD. And you can also check out our Her Show page at RadioMD.com for all of our past episodes. Thanks for listening, and stay well.